Welcome to Heaving Bosoms, the podcast where two best friends recap romance novels while going on healing journeys and feeling so hungry. HBs. This week on the bonus feed, you are going to get quickies on the next three books of the series we're covering today. We were completely enamored with the Opposites Attract series, and it just worked out that both Sabrina and I managed to mainline the next three books immediately. So, if you love the side characters you hear about in this episode, you'll love our bonus episode this Friday on Patreon and our Apple subscription feeds. This week, we're covering another five-star review bribe book with The Opposite of You by Rachel Higginson. This is book one in the Opposites Attract series. This was one of the three books that patrons voted on for our next reading list, and wow, are we now super pleased about it. I knew nothing about this book before patrons chose it. Get ready for enemies to lovers, chef times, y'all. Here's part one of The Opposite of You by Rachel Higginson.
I saw on our mutual Libby situation that the next book in this series, the audiobook, might have already been pulled.
Wow. Well, it seems like you might be behind the times because not only has the second one been pulled, but it's been read and the third one has been pulled.
No, I did see that it was 100% on the second book. I didn't look further than that because I was going down the rabbit hole for another series that we will be reading.
Oh, I saw that. I saw that rabbit hole on there. Boy, did I.
We're fucking gremlins.
Yeah, we are.
Who am I? The only reason that I even saw that happening to you is because I was like, seven books, I'm not letting my nemesis get me this time.
That's right. That's right. Gonna take them all out right now.
So I'm gonna guess, I'm just gonna hazard a guess that you enjoyed this book.
No, I hated it. No, I loved it. I loved it. Book was so good.
Okay, listener, we're just going to hop right into it because this is going to end up being a 50 million year episode if we, anyway. So we did The Opposite of You by Rachel Higginson, which is a contemporary enemies to lovers. And I'm not going to lie, going in, I was like, man, I'm just so not in the mood for a contemporary. Like, I'm just in general not right now.
Yeah.
I have so, I have no regrets. I read that synopsis or the summary and I was like, oh, that sounds fun. Cause it's like a little enemies to lovers. Like they're both chefs. She has a food truck. He's like a critically acclaimed five-star chef. Oh, I can't wait. And then I started that book and
And it deals with like incredibly heavy topics in such a masterful way.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't shy away from the really, really tough stuff, but at the same time, it's not re-traumatizing. At least it wasn't for me.
So that's like one of the biggest things for me specifically. So I know like I've kind of hinted like and it's going to end up coming up on the podcast. So I'm just going to let everybody know now. Like I have a history with domestic abuse and this book is the most seen I've ever felt as far as that's concerned. Because, like, content warning, listener, like, we're going to be talking about this throughout the entire episode. It's a pretty big plot point. Is she had a previous relationship. He ends up coming back at one point in this book. But the way she deals with it and talks about it and heals from it is very, like, it's great, frankly. Because it's not, she even says it in the book, it's not extreme abuse. She didn't end up in the hospital.
Right.
And it was all very, like, minimal as far as the gamut is concerned.
Yes.
On
yeah,
what
as far as the spectrum, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it doesn't change the fact that it's domestic abuse.
Yeah, and it doesn't change the fact that it shakes your identity.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like that throughout the book, we won't be able to talk about every instance, and that's why I want to just say it up front.
Mm-hmm.
I really liked the way we saw her falling back into self-talk that's obviously not hers, you know? Like, falling into self-talk that is obviously the shadows of her abuse, and then mm-hmm. watching her come back and be like, no, wait, no, no, that is not my voice. That is not reality. And talking herself, you know, back into self-love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was really, really gorgeous.
And it's not even just the self-love aspect. It's the idea that you didn't deserve that. Even.
Yes.
Even though in the grand scheme of things, no, you didn't end up like the lack of trusting yourself because you once made that decision, made a decision
woof
that led you to that situation and then second guessing any other thing after that.
Absolutely.
Even, and not just like relationship wise in general, like it's insidious after you get out of a situation like that. It's this book handled it. This book was really beautiful.
It truly was. Yeah. So we open up and our heroine, whose name is Vera, whose name is Vera, she is setting up her brand new food truck with her best friend, Molly. And Molly's like painting the logo on the side and it's so
and
fun.
It specifically states in the book, she's like, yeah, I spent months workshopping names and it's Foodie. Foodie is it. And I'm like,
Foodie the food truck.
Months.
I dug it.
I love it. It was adorable. But the fact that she was like, this months and months.
It's all culminated in Foodie the food truck. Yeah, yeah, totally.
Oh my gosh.
So we find out over the course of the book, but a lot of it is front loaded right here. We find out that she has just moved back like a couple of months ago from essentially backpacking and cooking her way through Europe in order to escape an abusive relationship. And the reason that she finally was, you know, spurred to come home is because her dad was, so trigger warning also, her dad was diagnosed with bladder cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So she came back to, you know, spend the last months with him, help care for him, do all of that. And man, was I, I was girding myself for Chekhov's cancer dad.
I knew, I was like, I
don't
want to
deal with Chekhov's cancer dad right now.
I was waiting for her, like everything to be going right in her life. And then her to be like, and then I got the call. My father was dying. I was like, no, I'm not ready for that.
Spoiler alert, dad is good through book two. Okay, dad is doing great.
Yeah, he was cancer-free by the end of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I loved that too, because when she comes home, the dad's stance on it is, I'm not going to have the surgery they suggest, but I will do the chemo treatments.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the background, on the sidelines of this whole romance, is watching him reconnect with his kids for the first, and maybe even connect with his kids for the first time, because he had to work so much when they were younger. Mm-hmm. Their mom died when they were really young. And so he had to work so much to put food on the table that, like, they didn't really have a really close-knit relationship. The siblings are closer than the dad and the kids. And so we watch him, like, become a dad again. And as a result, by the end of the book, he decides, no, you know what? For you two, because I fucking love spending time with you now, I am going to have the surgery. And then by the end, he's in remission. Like,
oh, my God. The family dynamics in this book were so good, too. Like,
they were lovely.
You know what this reminded me too? Like, so the joy I got out of this specific flavor of enemies to lovers, because there's always different vibes of enemies to lovers, right? They're different.
And, like, this one's almost more of a rivals to lovers, except they're not actually competing at all.
Mm-hmm. But she has decided that he is just, fuck that guy, and he's like...
I don't blame her.
I am a la hating game. I am such
a
slut.
Yes, he has imprinted.
I am such a slut for an enemies slash rivals to lovers, where he is just... like, laid down.
Laser focus. Yeah.
And just, this is it. And they're, like, snarky and sassy. And he's such a dick.
He's such an asshole.
Oh, gosh. I can't stand him. And meanwhile, he's like, oh, my God. She's so beautiful. And she's upset.
She's hung
me.
The moon. I know. Look at her. Well, and it's so funny because in book two, there are a couple of moments when they're joking, and the couple in this story, we get to see quite a bit of them in the second book, and they're being like, no, when I did it, it was okay because it was like flirting. And then Vera's like, that was flirting? Like, I didn't know that. And then Molly jumps in to be like, everyone else did.
It's like, literally stated in this book.
Everyone else knew.
At one point, what's her butt? The best friend. What'd you just say her name was?
Molly.
Molly. Yeah. Like, at one point, Molly's like, I can't, like, this is, like, this is all just foreplay. And
yeah, she's like, I can't tell if this is, like, my favorite soap opera or just foreplay between two insane chefs.
and Vera's like, this isn't foreplay. We're not interested in each other. And Molly's like, okay.
It's so good. So anyway, she's setting up Foodie the Food Truck. And her whole plan, she wanted to be like a 5-star chef. She wanted to run her own kitchen. But because of past relationship trauma, she has decided that, like, she's going to do food truck and that's where she's going to stay. And part of the reason is because she's still low-key hiding from her ex. So she doesn't want accolades.
Well, and not only that, he is a 5-star chef. He fucking groomed her like a nasty little piece of shit while she was still in college. And then when she left, he blackballed her from the industry in North Carolina.
Yeah.
What a dick.
Yeah, he's awful. So she's doing food truck. She's very excited about it. She's obviously terrified, too, because her dad gave her a little bit of startup money. But, you know, she took out a business loan. She's got a lot of debt.
Took out his 401k because he's just accepted he's dying. He's like, you get your inheritance early. And
oh,
I was
my
like,
God.
Dad, daddy-o.
I appreciate it, but, like, were the tax penalties worth it? I don't know. Like, I hope you really thought about this. Anyway.
So she started this. Her brother Van also opened his own business. He has, like, the hipsteriest little bike shop in the fancy part of town. He's a granola boy with all of
his
granola.
Can I tell you the secret?
Is he one of the other books?
He's the fourth book.
I'm so excited for his book. I have to know because I haven't looked at the rest of the books yet. Does Wyatt get a book?
Wyatt is the third book. You know, in this book, at some point, Killian, the hero, puts him in charge of the kitchen while he, like, leaves to help Vera with something. And he's like, okay, well, who's in charge right now, chef? And he's like, Kira. And
is
Wyatt's
Kira
like,
the third book?
Kira is the third book. She's a blue-haired fucking badass in the kitchen. She gives him all the shit.
Okay, so, like, as much as I love this series, I'm definitely in a place I cannot, like, mainline contemporaries right now.
Get ready.
But, like, it's going to be every
Buckle
other book
up.
Right now. It's going to be, like,
You know what, though? You have to do a thing for the listener, though. You have to make a sacrifice for the listener. Because if you have time, right after this recording, I can give you a quickie on the second book. And you need to just deal with that so that listener can have it. Just get over it. Because I'm having the Onyx Storm discussion with someone else. You can take this one for the team.
I know. Can I? I'm about
no.
to finish. I'm starting the second book today, though.
Great. You're going to be so excited about it.
Wait, can't we just do a couple of quickies in like 2 days?
We always say that, but then we don't do it.
No, I swear to God. If I haven't done it, if I have not read the book and we can't talk about it in 48 hours, you can tell me about the rest of the fucking series.
Okay. All right.
I swear to God.
Okay. Okay. All right. I'm just saying.
Listener, I am fighting for my life here.
She is hanging on by her fucking fingernails. I might even have my mom face on right now. Like, I don't know.
I feel like I'm about to get a, if you don't do this, I'm going to be very disappointed in you.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk about consequences, Sabrina, okay?
How fucking dare you? So anyway, let's just jump in. So her brother, Van, he owns this little granola bike shop. He's just, the supporting cast is just so freaking good in this series.
Yeah.
And he's letting her set up in his parking lot because they have completely different hours. She's like leaning into the late night out and about crowd. He often, his people are asleep with their overnight oats set up.
That's right. They've got to get up at 4 in the morning to cycle to wherever.
Yeah. To their whole grain,
taco organic truck or whatever. Yeah.
Like they're so fun.
At one point, he's like, yeah, no, you've got built-in customers. I'll like send all my people to you. And she's like, Van, that is not at all my clientele. Oh, it's
however,
so funny.
Listener, it just so happens that Van's bike shop happens to be across the street from another restaurant, Lilu. I'm assuming that's how it's pronounced.
Yeah, Lilu. And it is the 5-starriest, most exclusivest, most expensivest restaurant in all of Durham, Melanie, North Carolina. Okay.
I need you to know this book made me
so hungry. So hungry.
I was so fucking hungry the entire time I was reading this and just dying.
Yeah. Like, I think I'm going to have to tell Michael to make me lamb meatballs or just lamb. Michael, well, make me lamb.
I'm glad for you.
I need you to sear a steak.
You have
for me, please.
Somebody else who could do that for you. Yeah, if Michael, I want this, I have to do it myself. And as we know, I live right now on cottage cheese and eggs because I don't like cooking.
I know. If I had to do this for myself, oh boy, I would have to go spend $300 in New York City.
I'm thinking what I might do is this weekend's actually my birthday, and I'm going to go see the Arkansas Orchestra for my birthday.
Yeah,
they're doing a musicals thing, and I might splurge and make reservations at a really fancy restaurant for dinner. Because of this book.
Yes, you
usually
should.
I do sushi for my birthday, but I might do like a fancy.
You
little
should.
Fancy. Ugh.
You should
anyway.
Do it. You should go to a place where you look at the plates and you're like, that is a serving for a mouse. And then somehow you still leave so full. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's beautiful. And then you still leave like so full, so satisfying.
Even if my belly isn't full, my soul is, you know, that's
true.
That's what I'm looking for. Right.
True.
Here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, those restaurants seriously are witchcraft. Okay.
Yeah.
They're
agreed.
Witchcraft because they talk me into being satiated on a portion that is just bonker small.
It is for ants.
Yes.
It is a portion for ants. And then you walk out and you're like, wow, actually, I'm feeling pretty good. And I think that the biggest thing there is the acknowledgement that you don't have to be stuffed. Be
how dare you?
No,
I am a full-bodied woman.
That is a me call out as well. Because
yeah, no,
if I'm eating at home, I'm like,
yeah.
So anyway, Van is helping her set up. She has decided on her final, like, she's like, this is what I'm doing this weekend. She's only open Thursday through Saturday.
Yeah.
And it's Thursday, so she's doing her like test run that day, basically.
Yes.
And then we see a tall, lithe, sexy, ooh, tattooed man on a motorcycle come roaring down.
He's got a beard. Ooh,
wow,
that beard.
This author, ooh, and this character are obsessed with Killian Quinn's beard.
Obsessed. To the point that I was like, how is she going to write book 2 where Hero does not have beard?
You know?
What will she talk
like,
about
I'll
for
put
Hero?
It this way, listener. The sexiest
she does
thing
just
about,
fine, FYI.
The sexiest thing about fine. This character, this chef, Killian Quinn, is apparently not his sexy chef hands, because those are only mentioned like a couple of times.
Oh my God.
Or his sexy tattoos, which are only mentioned a couple of times. Or his sexy sparkling eyes or his perfectly tan skin. No, it is the beard that is mentioned no less than 50,000 times. Literally, every scene has multiple mentions about what his teeth behind his beard, or I can't see his lips behind his beard, or wow, that beard
lips
looks
go
so
flat
nice
behind his beard. Uh-huh. Or he pulls his beard into a point and then puts it back into shape. Like, he's always, his beard is very present. His beard is the third main character.
His beard is, this is a thruple, actually, listener.
Yeah, it's a polyamorous romance.
The beard is the third.
Yeah. Frankly, I couldn't throw stones, you know? Like, it worked for me. And I'm not even a beard person. I'm almost an anti-beard person.
It just made me laugh, because do you know how much emphasis needs to be put on something for me to clock it as a continuous yeah thing? Like, about halfway through the book, I was like, I think the beard's actually the main character.
Yeah. Well, so she's doing a bunch of things in the background to try and make this food truck a thing, because this was written, well, it says it's like set in 2017. And so food trucks are blowing up all over the U.S., but they're not as prevalent in Durham. She's going to be the first food truck. Mm-hmm. So she's like done on the socials and everything. And then she starts feeding the trolls. There's a guy called James Q who messages her. I knew it, too.
I knew it.
I Sherlock Holmes it hard.
Immediately. Okay? And the way I was literally, I don't remember who I was talking to about this recently, but like one of my biggest issues with some books is how long this goes on for and how it turns into huge thing. And the way that this one is handled, listener, it literally is like there's two interactions where she doesn't know that this is Killian. And then literally when he finally puts his number in her phone, he puts it in under this person's name.
As James Q. So he just like confirms it for her. Well, so basically he just comes out swinging as a big old NIMBY being like, I'm not going to, like, these restaurants are going to be so mad at you, like, not in their backyard. What's up?
What's a NIMBY?
A person, we've had this discussion on podcast,
I know
actually.
We have.
This is incredible.
I don't remember.
No, I hear you. It's not in my backyard. Like, I'm not going to allow this in my neck of the woods kind of people.
I remember that it was a thing. I could have Googled it, but I figured I would just ask you again.
No. Yeah, you're totally fine. Yeah, so he is like, you're going to be the huge failure and like, mer. And so she, I love it because she goes through the hate draft and then she backspaces for her life. And then she like does the professional draft back.
Man, like I feel that.
Big old mood. Mm-hmm. And then now it's Thursday and she's doing her test run.
Just
and then
of note, there's
Canuck.
One quote in this entire conversation where she's talking to James Q over the phone, where she's thinking about herself and like, it made me laugh so hard. She said, a dirty look from a hamster could send me into a tailspin of self-hate and tears these days. And I was like, wow, baby. But also like, that's a hilarious description. You're right.
That's that was me last week when we recorded.
Mood.
So she's bringing the produce in and he's standing there and it's so funny because she just freezes and she's like, if I was any kind of normal fucking person, I would just say hello, but like, can I just continue walking and pretend it's not my truck? Like, how do I escape this?
What mood, just being like, I could just walk away from everything right now.
Everything. Yeah. But this is not who Vera is, and it's not who she wants to be anymore. She doesn't want to be the person who runs from her problems or runs from conflict. She, like, a lot of this book is not only her finding herself again, but also her becoming comfortable with standing up for that person.
Yes.
And it's great because she says over the book that like it's sort of his gentle bullying that helps her find that voice again.
So this is one of the biggest reasons that this book, so I actually cried a lot in this book.
Yeah.
Part of the reason it took so long to read is like there were a lot of scenes that like this was a really healing book to read, frankly. And like there were scenes where she kept talking about, and this hit me like right in the soft parts, because, and this is later, like this is throughout the whole book and specifically kind of comes to fruition later in the book, but she is talking about how she is not, she's working on standing up to people and like standing up for herself and all of these things and all of these things. And then by the end of the, and she's doing it and she's doing it, but also she's just not a confrontational person.
Yeah.
And so it's like, she's trying to do this to take care of herself, but also like, that's not who she is naturally, which is part of the reason like that. It's really, when you're that kind of person, it's easy to get into the kind of situation.
Bulldozed.
Yeah. Domestic abuse is just so insidious.
Yeah.
And by the end of the book, she's like, I can stand up for myself now, but I'm recognizing the difference between standing up for myself and being confrontational, because there is a difference.
And I think I know the part you're talking about, and I really liked it because she says that Killian's really good at that. And sometimes it just comes down to personality. That's not my natural inclination. And I don't need to turn into a different person in order to stand up for myself.
And not only that, she states at one point, I felt very seen in this moment where she was talking about how realizing that there are people that you can do. That's how you know you really trust somebody, is when you can come back at them and they're not going to attack you for it in all of your soft
or
places.
Punish you.
Yep. Punish you. That's a better explanation.
Yeah.
But like,
no. I think it's it's multifaceted, the way that someone can come back at you, you know?
Yeah.
So he's standing there and he's like, this your food truck? And she's like,
he's such a dick.
My food truck. And then he's like, do you know who I am? And she's like, yes, I know who you are. You're Killian Quinn. And he's like, do you know that's Lilu and that I run Lilu? And I really wanted her to be like, yeah, I see it with my fucking eyeballs every day that I've been here, because we are neighbors. She basically says that to him. She's like, I have heard of Lilu, actually. And, you know, you're right there. And so you've really been on my radar quite a bit. So he's just like, yeah, well, I hope you don't think that you can compete with Lilu or like a chef like me. And she's like, I don't.
We're
I
two
don't.
Different things.
I'm
We're
going after
completely...
a. Yeah, we have different operating hours. I'm going for a different type of clientele. I'm not trying to compete with you. I'm just my own thing. And so, how about this? She finally says to him, how about you don't think of me and I don't think of you?
And
we just live our
listener,
fucking lives.
This is the moment, listener, where he goes, oh, I'm going to be thinking. In his head, he doesn't say this out loud, but you know Killian Quinn in his head.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I'm not going to be able to stop thinking about you, though.
You just ensured that I will obsess over you and all of your curvy badassery is what he's thinking to himself. So he leaves and he's just like, yeah, well, catch my chef farts. And she's like, well, he is officially a big giant asshole. And first night rolls around, she decides her style is like comfort food done
modern
in a gourmet
Americana
way.
Americana comfort food with a twist.
With a twist, yeah. Fancy, fancy types. And so she's doing like a grilled cheese with a tomato soup drizzle and stuff. Oh boy.
She's going classic.
Yeah. And the first night is bananas. Everybody comes. And so at a certain point, Van comes by to be like, hey, like, you want to pay rent in dinner? Like, this is why I'm here.
And she's like, actually, I want to pay rent by enlisting you to take change and money.
That's right. I need you to take orders. Thank you so much. Here's your stool. And Van is like, what? Come on. Yeah. And so Van comes in and he helps her. And then we meet a group of restaurant people.
Most importantly, listener,
yeah,
we meet Wyatt Shaw.
That's
who
right.
Who is the biggest, burly, tattooed, alt little boy that is not little at all, with an eyebrow piercing, and he is a puppy wiggling his little tail.
He hero worships Killian. He's his like head sous chef. And so he's just like, I want to be Killian when I grow up. And like, nah. And actually, he reminded me of the chef at a restaurant I worked at in Peoria. Like, it's just like one of those dudes who's just like giant and burly and tattooed. And like, you know, you see him and you might be like, nah, I don't know. Like, I don't know that he's not very approachable to look at, right?
You know what he reminded me of?
Oh, gosh. So sweet.
Seven. In the Seven series, Accidental Love.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But more emotionally put together.
More emotionally intelligent and also more sweary. One of the best things about Seven is that he doesn't swear.
Sure.
He'll be like, what in the frogging hell are you doing? Anyway, so Wyatt gets there. All of them order dinner, and she doesn't know, like, which restaurant they're from, but she's thinking, like, it couldn't possibly be Lilu, right? Like,
why would they eat here?
Come on. And they order, and he goes, oh, my God. Oh, my God, this is good.
This is delicious.
And she's like, I'm sorry, were you expecting garbage? Like, what are you doing? And he says, no, I didn't know what to expect. And, like, this is, like, legitimately so good. And then he says, he's going to hate you even more now. And she's like, what? Who? That's fucking ominous. Like, what are... And then he just walks away without explanation. Wyatt!
But then, more importantly...
And he has extra food.
He has extra food. And then later that night, he shows back up with a note. And he's like, I'm so sorry about this. And he hands it to her. And it's a note from Killian absolutely ripping her food to shreds and giving her shit about salt. And just...
It is his notes on her technique, on her execution, on her everything. And she's like, this is fucking unsolicited and what a dickbag. And like, what is he just doing this to make me feel bad about myself?
Melody, this man is somebody who never grew out of tugging girls' pigtails when he has a crush on them.
Yeah. But I also think that it's like, it's very indicative of the culinary culture that they've both come up in, right? Because like, we end up finding out that he's like 8 or 10 years older than her, and he has a lot of kitchen experience, and he's an acclaimed, like a nationally renowned chef. Like, he's a big deal, and she's greener. For sure greener. But I love it because, oh no, we're going to get to it when the book gets to it. But anyway... So, yeah, he's just like, wow, it is oversalted. Oh, my God. Like, really
also,
think about
like,
it.
Also, like, really grilled cheese and tomato soup. Like,
yeah.
come on now. Like, oh,
you can do better.
Oh. And so it's the next day and she's like, oh, my gosh, I was so embarrassed. But the whole weekend, actually, we're like, the whole weekend goes great. She ends up enlisting her bestie Molly to help the second night. Everything is fantastic. And she's like, okay. I need to step it up this weekend. I need to find this, and I need to find the secret place that everybody gets their produce that's like the best stuff. And so she's on a hunt, and she's just doing her best, and it's beautiful.
It is beautiful. And like, her strategy for food truck is that every weekend the menu changes. And after the first weekend, she learned that, like, it's going to be better, especially since I'm a one-woman show, to not have two options. I'm just going to hone it down to one option, and it's going to be the best fucking food I've ever made, especially on a large scale.
Do you know how much money? I don't even go out partying anymore. Do you know how much money I would spend at this late-night food truck?
At least $35. Yeah, if it's like $10 a plate, I'm going to spend a cool $35.
Minimum, I'm eating there once a week. Like,
yeah.
This is what I do on a Friday night. I don't go dancing or partying. I leave my house, get this food, sit at the park, and then go back to my knitting.
delish. Yeah. So this is when she does lamb sliders, right? She does like Greek
lamb
meat, sliders.
But, like, yeah, gyro sliders with Greek
and Greek fries.
God, I'm so fucking hungry just talking about this book. Oh. I hate this book. I hate it.
I know. So that weekend, Wyatt goes back and he gets a plate.
She's like, you're allowed to eat it, but you have to eat it right here. You're not allowed to eat in front of me. You cannot go back. And they make an exchange. She's like, I will give you another if you bring me dessert from Lilu. And
that's
he's
right.
like, oh, man, okay, which one do you want? And she's like, I want both.
Both. And you're going to eat the second plate in front of me, too, because she doesn't want him absconding and taking it back to Killian on the sly so that he can send her more fucking notes. She's like, I don't want to deal with this asshole. I just want to stay in my lane and flourish on my own. And Wyatt's like, but I need another. The meatballs were so good. So she's like, fine, bring me dessert and then you can sit in the truck again and eat. And so later on, who comes ambling over? There are a couple of times in this book where it describes Killian's walk as ambling over.
Killian?
Ooh, Killian.
Killian James Quinn is yeah. sex on a stick. He's so hot.
Yeah. And so he comes over and he's got two gold, literally gold, takeout containers. And he sits them on the shelf and he's like, I heard you made an exchange of goods for goods. And I'd like to capitalize on that. I'm going to take you up on your offer. And she's like, the offer was for Wyatt and Wyatt alone. I'm not dealing with you. He ends up talking her into it, finally. And then he's like, you know what? I'll keep my opinions to myself. And she's like, fucking fine. I'll do the show. And she makes the whole thing. And I'm not going to lie to you, Sabrina. This was, I didn't know how to take this part. Okay. Because he eats it and like there's no expression on his face whatsoever. She's trying not to watch him because she doesn't want to care about his opinion. But then he goes, he like opens his mouth and she's like, that. Yeah, you said you would not say anything and you're going to keep your promise.
And then she turns around for half a second. And when she turns back around, he has dissected the entire meal and he can't help it. He just starts telling her about herself and the food. And he's like, you need to do blank, blank, and blank. And also there's too much salt.
It's still too salty. And she's like, no, I made the perfect meal. I tested it out over and over. And he puts a bite on his fork and he holds it out for her and he's like, taste this. And she's like, I did fucking taste it. I tasted it for days when I was creating the recipe. And he's like, humor me. And she's like, why are you doing this? Why are you obsessed with me? Like, go eat your food at Lilu. And he's like, humor me. And then he says, please. And it's his please that is always going to get her throughout the book. It's his, like, very shockingly gentle.
Earnest?
Please. Earnest. Ooh, please. That gets her. So she takes the bite, and she chews, and then she's like, I hate you. And he goes, no, you just hate that I'm right. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's tough going from, like, a one-serving trial to a giant vat of stuff.
Well, and on it's top of that, she makes a good point that nobody other than another 5-star chef is going to notice that there's too much salt in this meal. Like, anybody else, this is a perfect meal. But, like,
this meal would knock my socks off. If I took my clumsy palate over to this food truck and got one of those gyro sliders, I would die of satiation. I would die of happiness.
Yeah.
And then if you take my clumsy palate that's also drunk, oh my God, it's life-changing.
Listener, and then he's like, this is what you need to do. And he comes into her food truck and does a bunch of stuff.
No, not yet. And this is the part that's important to me. I wouldn't have corrected you except that he tells her all the things. And then he takes his quote-unquote half-eaten meal and throws the rest away as he, like, saunters back over to his restaurant. And, like, I know that people who are in food do this, right? Like, they take a couple of bites and then throw the rest away. But if somebody gave me 18 notes about my shit and then they threw the rest away, I would murder someone.
It tracks that she's like, this is my enemy. And he's like, yeah, I'm flirting.
She's so hot.
Gee, I like how feisty this one is.
Yeah. So it's the next day and she's in her food truck earlier. She hears his vroom vroom motorcycle come up. And then he comes over and he's like, he's standing at the door. He's not coming in. He's like standing in the threshold and he's like, I just want to say, and I'm pretty sure he's saying like, I want to say like, sorry for the delivery or whatever. Like, who knows what he's going to say? But that's what it sounded like to me. And instead, he looks over and he sniffs and he's like, are you reworking the sauce? are you reworking after we chatted last night, after my notes? Oh my gosh. And he comes in and he's like, yeah, I'm going to help you. And he starts like getting stuff down. And she's like, excuse me, this is my kitchen. And he's like chopping mint. And he's like, oh man, this is a nice knife. Wow, you do know how to take care of your tools. And she's like, stop giving me backhanded compliments, you neg machine. And he's like, he like laughs and he's like, take the compliment, chef.
And she almost creams her panties that this man calls her chef. Like,
yeah. She's like, oh my God, Killian Quinn referred to me as chef. Like, that is an accolade coming from him. Mm. So he reworks the sauce and then he's like, yeah, and I think maybe you leave the tzatziki for the fries. Oh, because the first thing he said when he took bites of her meal last night was, the fries are clever. And they would have been like the highlight of the meal, except for all this other stuff. And like, I didn't even know what that meant. Is it because everything else is shitty, or is it because everything else is really good
that they're not the highlight? She also importantly didn't know what to take that.
Exactly.
And then they're all close up together. He has her backed up against that stove, that griddle.
He's got his hands on her hips.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he puts it like up onto her. Onto her skin, under her shirt, a tiny bit.
The tension is there.
Oh, it's tense.
And then her dad shows up because he's taking
money
that night.
Hey, Vera, sorry, I'm late. And they jump apart and they're like not making eye contact. And then the dad's like, oh, I didn't know you had company. And she's like, I don't have company. He's not company. I don't know what you're talking about. And both the dad and Killian are like kind of like looking around being like cricket, mm-hmm. like cricket chirping. Oh, I don't know what that means. And she's like, he's helping me, but he's leaving. And he was just about to leave, and so he's going to leave now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so great.
And then we have the cutest scene of him helping her that night. And he is not a techie person. And he causes absolute chaos, but everybody loves him. And she just has such a good time with him.
She's like, I forgot my dad was funny.
Mm-hmm.
It's really nice to know that.
So then, listener, we get into one of the best things. We get like an epistolary style situation where we just keep getting note back and forth. And there's so many funny ones, but I have two quotes for you, listener.
Please.
Because they're bantering over notes. Why it's always the one to deliver. They're officially, that's the thing, is they're officially banned. She's not selling it to either of them, but he has little spies who bring him back the food every day. The notes still don't stop. The weekend I made meatloaf burgers on onion buns, he sent this back. Mushy and overseasoned. I'm taking away your salt privileges. And if you don't stop using parsley as a garnish, I'm suing. I will sue you for defamation. The next night, Friday night, I chopped up 4 cups of parsley out of spite and sent it over to Lilu in a to-go container.
Yeah.
I made Wyatt give it to Killian. Actually, I tried to get Wyatt to throw it in his face and yell, make it rain, motherfucker! But Wyatt was a giant, skinny chicken. Basically, Wyatt just handed it to him and explained my evil plan. And then apparently they had a nice chuckle over it. I hated them both. Lesson learned. Never send a man to get a woman's revenge. And then the next one is, the weekend I try to play on Rubens by stuffing biscuits with pastrami, Swiss cheese, house-made sauerkraut, and Thousand Island aioli to dip it in. Killian made a traffic ticket out of an order pad and fined me $1 million for, quote, forcing soggy biscuits on unsuspecting customers. $1 million. I copied his ticket on an order paper of my own and fined him $1 billion for being such an asshole.
That's right. Another time he's like, I'm taking away your salt. Don't fight it. This is the best thing for both of us. And so then the next day she goes to like a tractor supply store, picks up a 25-pound salt lick, and has Wyatt take it over to him. That's so funny.
And then my favorite one we can't even get to yet because it leads to a scene.
Yeah. So it's so cute. And like months are going by at this point, I realized later
on. By the way, listener, specifically what Melody's about to get to, she and Molly have decided that they're going to do their own secret shop. And so they do put their name on the waiting list, which is like 2 months long. And they're going to go eat at Lilu.
And so they do? And the waiter comes up and he does his very professional 5-star waiter routine. And then he's like, yeah, so just FYI, the chef is debuting a brand new menu.
In the middle of summer.
And so she's like, wait, just out of curiosity, when does the chef change the menu usually? And he's like, oh, he does it seasonally. And she looks at him and she's like, it's the end of July. This is, what is it? Is it fall now? Is now fall? And he's like, no, the chef decided mid-season to change it. And she's like, did he say why?
Inspired.
He says inspiration. He was inspired to change the thing. And then they bring out her tzatziki sauce with his spin. And she's like, he stole my fucking sauce. How dare he? But she's also, but secretly, she's like, I'm so flattered and honored.
And then she's like, they're being all secretive. They're like, that nobody knows they're there. And then Wyatt walks out with a freaking tray. And he's like, hey, girls.
Yeah. Nice to see you. So glad you visited.
And he's like, they have this little thing. And he's like, he'll be out later. And she's like, no, he doesn't have to do that.
No. Oh, my God. And like, he puts a platter down on their table and he's like, the chef wanted you to have a full array
aperitif
of the amuse-bouche. And he puts it down. And so they get like one bite of like fucking everything. Molly is losing her goddamn mind. There is lamb on the table that later on, Molly says that she has like a religious experience with it. Or maybe she says that. I don't know. But it's so good. And Molly's like, he stole your sauce. Would you say that maybe he was inspired? Mm-hmm. And she's like, no, there's no way. I'm just a teeny tiny food truck chef.
More importantly, listener, we meet the hero of the second book. Because Ezra, that guy who owns the restaurant, and historically, he has 4 restaurants. 3 of them are like well-known. The other, he's like a silent partner out of pettiness, spite, essentially. And the other 3 restaurants, they're all named after ex-girlfriends.
Yep. Lilu, Bianca, and Sarita are all his ex-girlfriends.
And like at one point, there's a conversation that happens where they're like, he doesn't really date. It's hard to date. And she's like, well, would you date him? He names all of his restaurants after ex-girlfriends.
I don't want to be a future restaurant. Yeah. Like, come on. Yeah.
And Molly and Ezra, they hit it off wrong.
Yeah. He asks her for her opinion on his like logo and website. And we like see a conversation off to the side. We don't really like hear what's going on. But then finally, Molly snaps at him and she's like, well, then you do whatever you want. Like, it's your website. It's your logo. Happy trails, dude. Like, I don't know. And he's like, oh, yeah, I should keep going, even though it looks like shit. And she's like, I did not say that. But like, sure, enjoy. And he's like, Killian, I'll be at my regular table.
Yeah. And then Killian is talking to Vera and he's like, so what do you think of the food? And she pauses and she looks at it and he has little puppy dog. But he's like,
he's nervous. He's obviously nervous.
They're getting ready to leave. And she stands up and she looks at him and says, you could go lighter on the salt.
Yeah. And he does a double take, which is hilarious to me. At that point, he's like, all of this is on me. We're going to bring out, your sampling of entrees as well and like more cocktails and everything. Please enjoy. And she's like, no, you don't have to. I will pay for it. And he says, just tell me what you're cooking this weekend. And she looks him dead in his beautiful face. And she says, I think I'd rather pay. And he goes, I will just have to stop by and find out for myself then. And she's like, wait, this is nothing is going the way I thought it would. Like, no.
He is such a smooth criminal.
Yeah. And like earlier, she was like, you stole my sauce. And he's like, inspired. I was inspired by your sauce. And she cannot believe that he has admitted to even that much, like, or acknowledged even that much. And then he's like, and also, it's super different. Like, get over yourself. You know that. She's like, yeah, well, he made my, like, pedestrian sauce, like, royal sauce now. It's, like, the best sauce ever.
And then, listener, she goes home. And we don't know that this happens until the scene comes to fruition when he comes stomping over because somebody left a review on Yelp absolutely obliterating their experience at Li Lu, and their name, their Yelp review name is Nana Nana Boo Boo. And he's like, this is you. And she's like, I would never.
How could you possibly think it's me? What are you talking about? And he's like, fussy? You said my food is fussy? And you said I'm elitist? How dare you? And she's like, I really thought that it was going to be less behind the times. Like, he doesn't even have a charcuterie board. He's so mad at her.
And then now they're all up close because he's like right up on her.
He's like, you're going to admit it. You are going to confess. And then she's like, what are you going to do? And he goes, torture you. And she's like, oh, yeah, make me.
And then he tickles her.
He starts tickling her.
And then when they stop tickling, she's like, you're right. It's me. She finally confesses.
I'm Nana Boo Boo.
And they stop and he stops tickling her. But his hands are still on her hips and like a little under a shirt. And it's hot. And then he's like, and now you're going to take it down. And so she does. Right in front of
him. Yeah, it says she's like still like looking up, mesmerized by his face and his eyes and that beard, of course. And she goes, and I sightlessly like just put my hand down on the counter and patted around until I found my phone. I picked it up.
Because listener, at this point, she has started recognizing a couple of different things that are very important about Killian. So even with her history, Derek is her asshole ex. And she has decided I'm focusing on my career. I am celibate for the rest of my life. Men are the literal devil, except for my father and my brother, and I guess kind of Wyatt.
And if I ever come out of my personal convent, never a chef again. Never.
But the thing is Killian, she feels comfortable around him. Like, she feels like she can push back. She doesn't act like this with anybody. And the fact that she's comfortable reacting like this and, like, talking back.
Well, and he's literally like so much taller than her. He has got her backed up into the counter. He's looming over her.
Mm-hmm.
And she acknowledges, she's like, with my history, this should be incredibly triggering. I should be terrified. I should be reacting like with fight or flight. And I'm just not. Like, this is just hot flirting. And I kind of don't know what to do with that. But she thinks, like, it speaks to the underlying differences. Like, on paper, it seems like Derek and Killian are very the same.
They're both arrogant five-star chefs. But ultimately, Killian's not cruel about it. He's not manipulative.
Right.
He's not,
right.
He's not
trying to hold her back.
In that way, he is an asshole.
But she says, like, she's starting to realize that every single one of his notes and everything was an attempt to make her better. And Wyatt says a couple of times, like, he loves your food. I don't know what you're talking about. And also, I would give both of my kidneys for him to taste some of my food and tell me what he thinks. Like, he's being so nice to you right now, giving you his time and professional opinion. And at that moment, she was just like, no, he's an asshole and I hate him. And now she's like, but he's backed up all of those notes with like actual hands-on help, with suggestions, with, you know, bandying back and forth with ideas. And she realizes that it's not an attempt to like put her down.
It's to build her up.
Yeah.
Oh.
In the way that culinary school taught him to.
And then, listener, they're all up on each other. And he's in her ear.
Yeah.
And then he starts, like, trailing his nose along her face. And he kisses her on the corner of her mouth.
And then on her jaw.
And then on her jaw.
And then he pulls back and he's like, good luck today, chef.
And walks
and
away.
And saunters back out wow.
How dare you, you sexy bastard.
You're a menace, sir.
So she's
okay?
Like, she's thinking to herself, she's like, maybe it wouldn't be so bad to like just give it a shot with Killian. You know, like, I could maybe break a rule. And then literally 2 seconds later, she gets a text message. Derek has found her.
Yeah, he messages her new Facebook page that's under like a quasi different name. It's under her first name and middle name. And the message just says, "Where did you go?" Mm-hmm. And she's like, "Oh, fuck. He's online found me," which is terrifying because like that means that he might be able to real life find her, especially since she's not being a 007 about this. She's literally
she's in her own.
Yeah. Yeah, she's in her hometown where he knows her dad and brother live. Mm-hmm. So the next time they talk, she's like, "I've been going around and I got to figure out like a better place to get produce." And he says, "Whoa. Well, have you thought of this morning market? What did I skip?"
"You missed the chicken and waffles." So she has a weekend where she has just like, this is just a quick scene, but it's,
everything goes to shit.
Yeah, it's just happens. A nightmare. She's trying to cook everything all at once, and he shows up, and he's like, "All right, where's my meal for today?" Because he started coming himself to get his food.
Yeah.
And she's like, "I'm not feeding you this." And he's like, "What? Well, yeah, you are. I'm a paying customer." And she's like, "No, I cannot feed this to you. I'm closed. Mm-hmm. I'm done. I'm out." And he's like, he ends up coming in and seeing just the absolute chaos.
And Molly tells him that, like, she's been getting berated by customers.
Yeah.
And it's
tough. He gives her the most beautiful talk where he's like, "All right, tell me what it is that you think sucks about you specifically as a person that has caused
this."
Yeah,
he says you need to name it.
And so she does. And then he starts like talking her through it and explaining why it's not like that. And it was just such a beautiful scene.
At one point, she's like, "Does that work? Does this like psychobabble work?" And he's like, "Yeah, I mean, for the most part. But if it doesn't, you know, we drink and then we get back in the saddle." And he's like, "So how are we going to rework this recipe for the rest of the weekend?" And she says, "Oh, no, I thought we decided that I was quitting." And he says, "Don't even talk like that. You are too fucking good to even joke about quitting. You belong in a kitchen. Like, this is your calling. You're too fucking good at this."
And then listener Molly leaves and it's just them two and they're talking and like sharing their histories and like where they both came up under and all of this stuff. And then he gives her the most motivating quote from his asshole first chef. And it's "Stop being a loser and make something better."
Yeah.
And he's like, "And I did. And now it's your turn."
Right. Oh, my God. My old speech team, one of the things that the coaches would say to us is, "Don't suck.
Don't good luck. Suck.
Don't suck." Like, just don't.
I like somehow that works. But also I hate it when people say that stupid stuff.
Same.
But yeah, now it's shopping time. He gives her a tip.
Yeah. She's like, "I need to find better produce." And he says, "Well, have you heard of this secret morning market?" She's like, "What? No, that's exactly what I need. Thank you so much." This is also the time where he invites her out with the like everybody on staff because it's Wyatt's birthday. And she's like, "I'll think about it." And he's like, "Yeah, I mean, it's fine. Like, you know me, you know Wyatt, and we can hang out, you know, outside of a kitchen." And then he puts his number in her phone under James Q. They now have each other's number so they can text. Mm-hmm. And she chickens out that night and she eats all the ice cream because she cannot face going out again. She doesn't trust herself still. She doesn't trust herself to not get into a relationship that will be, you know, debilitating to her future success and overall well-being. And so she's like, "No." But then Killian shows up at the market the next morning as she's looking over produce. They talk together. They shop together. They're talking about, you know, ingredients. He's asking her what she's thinking for the recipe. He's asking for her opinion on produce. And, you know, he's asking about like the growing information on the vegetables. Mm-hmm. And it's so wonderful because in these like really small moments, even though he is the more experienced chef, there are so many teeny tiny ways that he acknowledges her talent.
Yeah.
And her overall competence.
And this is so specifically important for her and yes. where she has come from because, so I'm just going to give you the laydown of her last relationship.
Please.
She was in school and Derek was a visiting chef and he took a shine to her. He was about 10 years older. He was really sweet to her. They always are.
And he was so complimentary of her talent. And he was like, I can help you. I will get you in front of the right people.
Uh-huh. And then the minute she graduates, she moves in with him. And mm-hmm. immediately, she's now under his thumb. And he is a manipulative bastard because that's what these kind of people, they're good at manipulation.
Yeah, he's talking her out of being like a sous chef at a really nice restaurant.
Specifically, he's yeah. telling her that I'm farther ahead right now. So let's get me to where I need to be so that then we can use all of my connections to help mm-hmm. boost you. But then he convinces her to go to halftime and not yep. to do this thing. And it becomes very clear very quickly that he's never going to let her be a chef.
No, no.
He at some point made a comment about her being a full-time home person. Like, home
yeah, yeah, yeah.
lady at some point. Yeah.
He informed her that she would no longer be working because yes. he needed somebody to be at home and taking care of things and be ready for when he has time off. And one of the ways that he told her not to take a specific sous chef position was to be like, we would never see each other. And so for our relationship to flourish, you know, you should probably do this other job that's less taxing and blah, blah, blah.
This hit, Melody, because I literally cut my paycheck in half to take a job where I didn't work weekends or nights.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. This book was really nice in a lot of ways because it...
I liked that it showed so many of the other facets of domestic abuse. It includes like a little bit of financial abuse. Mm-hmm. It's emotional abuse. It mm-hmm. does like a couple of times he does like, you know, hit her, but not very much.
He gets physical, but it's never to the hospital. It's never like right. the biggest point of her domestic abuse situation is that it's not a physical thing. That's not the biggest right. issue. Like that was a big thing, but like it was everything.
It's isolating
else.
Her. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And taking yep. her down piece by piece, like talking about her weight.
You can't go spend time with those people because like. I can't go with you.
And like, gosh, I don't have anything in common with your friends. And you're so mature that you have more in common with my friends. So why don't we just hang out with them instead? Like all of this insidious, it starts out complimentary. And then as time goes on, it gets more and more glaring what's yeah. actually going on.
Well, and specifically like looking at her age, just graduated from school, 22.
Oh, yeah.
Like he's 10 years older, he's set in his career. Like, yeah, it's grooming 101.
Absolutely.
And it's gross is what
it is. Most definitely. And so she's looking at that relationship being like, that chef was detrimental to my career, even though he made so many promises about helping me get ahead and like flourish. And so now she's in front of this other chef being like, he's in the exact same position, same age, same like place in life, same place in his career. But she's starting to notice all the differences in the way that he speaks to her, in the way that he values her opinion.
Well, and also like something of note, I know that we read a lot of age gap and things like that. And so Killian's like 32. And she's about 26. Yeah. So there's a pretty significant difference between. And that's not to say age gap is a problem. The issue
no.
is being yeah. at different, completely different places in your lives. Right?
Right.
So like at one point it comments while they're walking around because she's feeling like this like sense of like trust and safety while they're walking around this. She's coming to realize all of these things that Mel just said. And she says to herself, my past had damaged me. This was something I was well aware of. But for whatever reason, Killian Quinn felt like healing.
Yeah.
And it was really beautiful because there's this idea that after an abusive situation, after an abusive relationship, you need to avoid putting things on another person. But there are some
relying on anyone.
Uh-huh,
is that what you're saying? Yeah.
No, not even relying, but like you, I guess to an extent, but this idea that you can't date until you are healed, but there's some healing that's not going to happen until the next time you date. Because there's some things that aren't going to be a thing until
you can't do it in solitude. And she mentions, like, she doesn't go to, you know, capital T therapy, but she mentions that when she was on her solo trip across Europe, working in kitchens across Europe, she made herself, like, relive different events and talk herself through the gaslighting and make sure she really understood, like, what she did wrong and what he did wrong and how he twisted that to make her feel guilty and, you know, act a certain way as a result. I don't know. But yeah, it is one of those things where a lot of times that healing takes interaction with another person in order to
overcome it. In a specific kind of context, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, by the way, we keep talking about her Europe trip. So basically the context of her Europe trip is she tried to leave him a couple of times, break up with him a couple of times and end things. But it never stuck because he's a master manipulator.
Tale as old as time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so she finally, one day, it was when he told her that she was going to be stay at home. She had to quit.
Yeah.
She was going to be quitting her career, her dream of being a chef. And that was the final straw. That was it. That was her. She was like, I gave up my family. I gave up my friends. I gave up my independence.
Right.
That's the last thing.
You can't take cooking from me. You can't.
And she literally just left.
She ghosts him hard.
Because she knew that if she gave him the opportunity to talk to her, he would convince her to give him another shot because that's what he had always done.
Yeah, and like, that's what happens.
I get it. I literally, my turning point was being told I couldn't knit in public.
Oh.
Yeah. Like I couldn't craft in public because it's attention seeking, essentially.
Oh,
and
my God.
Like after years of isolation and being pushed, it was like all of these things and like getting away, it was just so if you've never been in that situation, like I lost friends over it like and all of these things, but for it was just I had lost so much, I had given up so much, I had just
you'd compromised quote-unquote
so much and then I had this one for what it was just it's such a key part of me, crafting. And like, there's no problem with doing that. And especially now that I know I'm diagnosed ADHD, like having something to do with my hands is so important. I have a fucking project in my lap right now.
Yeah.
And like, it really is. It's that when she said that she had given up this, she had given up that, she had this, and that. But the last straw.
Yeah.
Like the camel that breaks the back that is this is it.
Yeah.
That's exactly how it is. It's like, it's something so small.
Yeah.
Like the other people would be like, well, they do this to you. They do that
right.
to you. And it's like, yeah, they do all of those things. But like, you could,
it's the weird thing that makes the glass shatter.
Yeah.
I also really loved this because she still. And I think part of it is the remnants of being in that abusive relationship. She still carries a bunch of shame and guilt about the fact that it was cooking. It was being a chef that finally made her go, right? Mm-hmm. Finally made her take the drastic action. And she carries this shame about, like, it wasn't my family. I didn't fight for Molly. I didn't fight for blah, blah, blah. And I think she's also, throughout this journey, part of her healing is understanding that she didn't have the tools to fight for anything else because she could not see that it was happening. You know, like she needed the pattern of events in order to finally overcome and be like, fuck this and fuck you.
And just to put it a little bit into context, listener, I don't know how many of you have ever had friends or anything like that who's in a abusive situation, especially one that, like, it's so complicated if you've never, like, it's hard. I get it, because before I had my situation, I didn't understand. Why don't you just leave? Why don't
of
you
course.
Bit? Like, and like, I would support and love my friends, but it was very much a, like, why wouldn't you just go? Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't realize it's happening until it's happened. And then all of a sudden it's there and it's, oh, okay. Well, but now, like, they're so in your head is the biggest thing. And the, I think that the thing, I really loved that this book brought it up. Like I said, this book was really healing to read. This is another great example of like a book representation is just really nice. Like seeing all different whatevers.
Yes.
Like this is such a great represent. This book, I cannot possibly express to you. If you want to be inside of the head of somebody who has been in a situation where it's not the stuff that ends up on Dateline is what it is. It's not the stuff that ends up at the police station.
But I also really liked there was a moment in the book where she thinks to herself, like, wow, what would my life be like if I was still with Derek? Like, would he have hit me? Would he have killed me? Like, because this absolutely could
escalate,
have gotten to that point. And I also really liked that she acknowledges that part of the reason that she could get out is because she had the resources and the support and the infrastructure. Like, he wasn't on her checking account, so all she had to do was take him off of her savings account. And she had the resources to, like, literally go hide in Europe. And she was poor there. She was, you know, getting by the skin of her teeth and, like, working under the table at restaurants. But if she hadn't been able to completely isolate herself away from him, if she had just gone to Durham, he would have found her.
Well, and not only that, listener, she specifically, it's stated a couple of times in this book that it's not until way later in the book, it's stated very much in the very beginning of the book that her brother and her father don't know. All they know is that she and he broke up.
It was a bad breakup.
Mm-hmm. And she couldn't, frankly, have gone to Durham because of the shame. She feels a lot of shame and embarrassment that she made decisions that led to this situation.
Yeah, because she thinks she put herself in this situation. And that is a common narrative.
It is. And the hardest thing to acknowledge and accept is that you did make decisions that ended up in this situation. Mm-hmm. But it's not your fault that those people made those decisions.
Right.
She's lucky. She has the money to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and she has a trade. Right. She has a trade that she can ply in places where, like, she doesn't even speak the language. Right. But, like, cooking is the same everywhere.
Well, and some people would make the argument, though, is even if she didn't have that, she could have gone home to her family. And it's like, but, like, the shame of going to these people who have known you your entire life, that this is why I need to come home, and explaining it like this.
And with that the abusive narrative in your head, it's very likely that she's been told that they don't care about her anyway. And, like, she has shunned them. She realizes that, like, she has treated them terribly the last 2 years and ignored them and, you know, allowed somebody to take them away from her.
Well, and you did all of those things, but it's not like they reached out.
Oof. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But to go back to what we were talking about, like, my very first thought is, if you've never been in a situation like this, you might be asking, why is losing your friends not enough? Why is losing your family not enough? All of these things. And it's because, and I'm definitely projecting on her, right?
Yeah, you're using your own experience.
But it's because those are all external. But for her, cooking, for me, crafting, it is such an integral part of who you are. Like,
that's such a good point.
That isn't taking something away from you. That is telling you this is something that you cannot get rid of about yourself. And it's not even like, it's not an identity. It's not something you're born with. It's nothing like this, but it is something that is just such an integral part of who you are. You literally cannot imagine your life without this thing.
Yeah.
That
it's a pillar of your personhood. They're asking you to crush a pillar of your personhood.
Yes. And that, a lot of the people that I've talked to, and like definitely for me, it's like, oh, it's not even me that you want. It is this idea of me that you have decided fits into your life.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're not even doing, like, I'm not even dealing with this shitty situation because you like who I am as a person.
Right. You can't, oh my God, you can't rewrite it with they're doing it because they love me. Because they're trying to extinguish
they're
part
doing,
of you.
Yeah, they're doing That's such this a good because point. They're like they're holding on to me so tightly because they cared so deeply about me, and it's no, it's this idea of you that they have. Mm. But when you realize that their interpretation doesn't include really key parts of you,
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's a wake up call.
Yeah, yeah. So they're at this market. She is having this, like, you know, shopping experience with him. And then she's asking about a difference in, like, the lettuce they were just talking about. And he can't really articulate it. And so he's like, hold on, come with me. I'll just show you. And it says that, like, this is a fork in the road moment. What she should do is she should shut this shit down and she should walk away with her purchases and just never do this again. And she says, but I did something worse. I did something that I can never take back. And that is I followed him and I let him show me. Because he introduces her to his foster mom, who is a vegetable farmer in the area. So she learns so much about his childhood and the way that, like, this woman helped shape him into an actual functioning member of society. And, like, he's holding her hand when they walk up to the booth. And so she sees the foster mom notice that, like, they were connected in that way. And the lady, she's, like, really stern, but obviously she has a depth of caring that, like, goes back years. And so she's like, so how's that working out? Your truck parked right outside of Lilu. Like, did you plan it that way? And she explains that, like, it's her brother's lot, and so she can do it rent-free. And there's this, like, weight that comes off of Joe's shoulders because she was worried that this lady was taking advantage of Killian and his station in the industry to get attention. Mm-hmm. And it is just lovely.
And then Joe asks about, like, a lot of questions that Killian has never asked. Not through any fault of his own, but it just hasn't come up. And yeah, he ends up learning about her dad with cancer and not, like, and all these things that he just didn't know. And he's upset that he doesn't know. And he brings
he's like,
up.
You should have told me. She's like, when?
And she says, don't even pretend like you would have treated me any differently. His lips quirked, taking his beard on one side. Maybe, but I might have been kinder about how I went about it. Well, now you know. I'll expect flowers and chocolates now instead of nasty notes scratched on the back of order tickets. His smirk stretched into a full-blown smile. I doubt the critiques will stop, but we can work in some chocolate. That sounds fair.
Love it. So then after this, when they go to the car, he asks her to dinner. And she's like, Killian, I can't. And he's like, I don't know what can't means. That's an interesting way to phrase it. And she explains, like, I had a bad breakup and I'm not ready to date again. I'm not ready for a relationship or anything like that. And he does this thing that is so, I don't blame him because I'm sure he thought it was true in the moment. But he tries to be like, I'm not asking you to marry me. Sir, you have imprinted on her. That is kind of what you're asking
you
at the moment.
You full duckling on this lady. Like, but he says to her. Ooh, he ends up backing her up against the car because he accepts it. He accepts. He's like, okay, this is fine. Like,
and he says,
I understand.
Please don't apologize. You shouldn't still be explaining yourself. No is no, and that's perfectly fine. And then they keep on talking because he's like starts walking away and she grabs his wrist to keep him there. And she's like, thank you for understanding. And he's like, I don't understand.
And then he backs her up against the car and he has his hands on either side of her and he's doing that sexy loom. He's sexy looming and he says to her right up in her face, he says, you like me, Vera. And if you haven't figured it out yet, you should know I like you too. I like you a lot. Get over this ex-boyfriend of yours so we can explore where this thing goes between us.
And then he kisses her, doesn't he?
Then they kiss.
Then he kisses her right on the mouth. They smooch. that's where we're going to leave you today. Make sure you come back tomorrow for part two. Heaving Bosoms is produced by us, Melody Carlisle and Sabrina Bradley. Editing is done by me, Melody Carlisle. Our theme music is by the incredible singer-songwriter Brittany Fonts, and our art is by the ultra-talented author Kate Pryor. If you like our show, remember to follow us on your favorite podcast app, rate us 5 stars, and leave a review. That one small action is a huge way to help the show. If you want to get in touch with us for advertising inquiries or anything else, you can email us at heavingbosomspodcast@gmail.com. If you want more of us, visit patreon.com/heavingbosomspodcast. You can also find us on Instagram at heavingbosoms, on TikTok at heaving_bosoms, and in our Facebook group, the Heaving Bosoms Geriatric Friendship Cult. See you tomorrow.